Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the webcast. It's great having you with us. Thank you for joining us. And as you can see, I've got my friend John with me. There you go. Many of you will know John. He used to do the webcasts weekly with us, with Barry and I. And that was all good fun, the dynamic trio, as we were then, or something like that. So, John, how are you, my friend? And how's Bonnie Scotland?
Thank you.
How's Bonnie Scotland?
Wet.
Wet.
Wet. Yeah. We've had snow. It's gone. And now it's just rain.
Yeah. We've had our yearly dose of snow as well. All 1 inch of it.
Yuck.
Yeah. Yes. So life's treating you well?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just doing normal life. Making Fiona's dinner, putting the washing on. Hanging the washing up, putting the dishwasher on, emptying the dishwasher, you know, the usual.
There's going to be a lot of people watching, John, who are going to say, what's your daily rate? But I guess you can't do that. You can't hire yourself out at the moment.
No, unfortunately not.
Yeah.
It's not essential.
That's true. And how's Fiona doing?
She's good. Schools are on at the moment for children of key workers and children, you know, vulnerable children.
Yeah.
So she's in 4 days a week. They're rotating the staff so that the building isn't full every day.
Mm-hmm.
So she, tomorrow actually is her day to work from home.
Right. Okay. And she's finding, how's she finding that? The lessons and teaching and doing the online stuff as well, presumably.
They're quite well organised. She still finds doing the online assemblies a bit weird, a bit strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think she's now they've got a rhythm going, the teachers are know what they're doing, it's mm-hmm. running much more smoothly.
Yeah. So is your lockdown up in Scotland pretty much the same as our lockdown? Basically stay at home and keep yourself amused?
Yeah, stay at home, don't go out unless you have to, except for essential purposes. So food, exercise, yeah. Medical, dental, pardon me, all of those kinds of things.
Yeah, okay. Now, just before Christmas, you and Fiona both had the dreaded virus.
Yeah, I picked it up in Bulgaria. And when I came home from Bulgaria, poor Fiona got laid low with it too. So we didn't realise that's what we had because we didn't have a temperature. There was no coughing, nothing like that. So we thought it was a cold or a flu.
Yeah.
Until I think 2 days after 3 days after I came home, Fiona lost her sense of taste and smell.
Oh, right.
We thought, oh, that's one of the symptoms.
Yes.
So we went and got tested very, very quick. We were tested in the morning and that by around 5:30 okay. that evening we had our results.
Yeah.
Both positive.
Good.
So ironically, I had to spend 10 days in self isolation, as Fiona did. But my 10 days ran out before my 14 days isolation from my travel did.
So did you stay for the 14 or
did I was you... wiped out, Mark. I mean that was the thing. We were laid low.
Yeah.
I mean, we had no energy, mm-hmm. Just wanted to sleep all of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very unpleasant.
Yeah. And are you both okay now?
Yes.
Yeah. Taste and smell returned and everything else. And
yeah, well, yeah. I didn't have a problem with taste and smell. All I had was a cough.
Yeah.
I had no temperature I took my temperature every day.
Yeah.
And it never exceeded 36.4.
Wow, gosh. Well, we're pleased that you're well.
And so am I.
Yes. And just to let everybody know, obviously it's great having John with us, but Barry this week is away from the webcast because many of you will know that his mum had a major operation about 10 days ago. And today she's got to go back to the hospital to have her stitches taken out. And the only appointment they could get was like now. So I said to Barry, yeah, of course, you know, you have to do that. So he's taking his mum, who is recovering very well from the operation. He's taking his mum to the hospital to get that sorted out. So, but he'll be back with me next week. And just before I start talking with John, let me just remind you again of the seminars that I'm running with Trevor, 16th to 18th of February. It's just 3 days where we're talking about encountering the Father's love. And we're going to be doing two sessions each day, two sessions Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, followed by a Zoom question and answer. And the timing is slightly different this time because it's early in the morning here, so in the UK, 8:30 in the UK, 9:30 in Europe. But we're gearing it for Australia and New Zealand where it will be the evening. But even if the time is inconvenient, then you can just sign up and you can watch them in your own time. But all of the information is on my website, afathertoyou.com/seminars. And there's a couple more weeks left for people to sign up. So if you're interested, feel free to join us. Done some of these before and they've been really, really good, really enjoyed it. And it's not the same as being in the room with someone, but it's as good as we can get at the moment. So, John, are you missing travelling?
Not at all. No. Basically, that's the short answer.
That's good.
Yeah. Not at all.
No.
I don't really have any hankering to go travelling, I must admit.
Yeah.
You know.
So are you being like the rest of us and confined to Zoom and Facebook and doing stuff online, or,
yeah,
or are you
pretty much
just enjoying
pretty
a break?
Much. We did a conference in December, which was very good. Mm-hmm. And we have another one coming up in February.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
In fact, I'll put the I can't do comments. I was going to say I'll put one in the comments. But
you can't do that. You have to go on the live feed on the Facebook page to do that. But it's on your website, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in Father Heart Scotland website.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Do you want to tell us anything else about what you're doing at the moment? Changes for you
yes.
and stuff?
Well, a lot of changes. I'm currently doing some therapy, dealing with childhood trauma around violence and death and things, which has been crazy. Like yourself, I will be 60 in April.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can we just clarify that John is older than me?
my birthday is early in April, March is later.
And mine is later April, but it's the big 6-0 this year. So we were just saying beforehand, we might get a format like this and have a glass or something together.
Sounds like a plan.
Yes, sure does. So carry on.
I won't have far to go to collapse into my bed then.
Oh, my bed's just along the corridors.
Yeah, mine is just across the hallway.
Oh, well, there you go.
But the other big news is that I've spoken with Mark Head, and we had an email chat, and then I spoke with him on Zoom last week, and I am leaving Father Heart Ministries. It's been a long time in the making. There's no, just to let everyone know, there's no fallout, there's no offences or anything taken. It's just something the Lord's doing.
Yeah.
It really began, I guess, when we were in Sandy Cove in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. 2019,
months.
That was.
Yeah, 18 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, and I began to feel detached from everything then. And as the year went on, obviously, lockdown happened, and I was trying to remember the word there. Lockdown happened, the pandemic, and the detachment seemed to increase. And I thought, this is just because of the pandemic. It's because we can't travel, we can't do anything. But there were a few things that were really taking place. I suddenly realised that I didn't want to travel again. Certainly not in the near future, not to the extent that I was doing, you know, 5 or 6 months of the year away from home. And then we were preparing, I was thinking and preparing for this conference in last year. And the Lord gave me a word from Jeremiah, where it's, you know, the scripture where it says, stand at the crossroads, look for the ancient paths, watch for the good way, walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls.
Yeah.
And I realized that what had been happening over this year is the Lord had stood me at the crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
And the detachment and everything else I was feeling was because there was a new path, a new direction for me.
Yeah.
I still don't know what that is quite yet,
mm-hmm.
but it was quite clear that this is something the Lord was saying.
Yeah.
And so I contacted Mark and said, this is what's happening. When I was in Bulgaria, I mean, the speaking part was great. You know, I love speaking. But the grace for everything else, the travel, the being with people, the driving mm-hmm. around, it just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't enjoying it and I wanted to go home, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
It didn't help that I found my host dead.
That didn't help.
But I just wanted to be home.
Yeah.
And since I've been home, I'm finding real contentment in it.
Mm-hmm.
And just doing everyday life, not doing anything exciting or anything greatly spiritual in any public way,
mm-hmm.
but just being at home with my wife and enjoying it.
Good.
Taking walks and,
yeah,
as good. I say, doing all the domestic chores.
Good for you. Wow, that's a change because it's been many years.
Well, yeah, I first connected and began to identify with Father Heart Ministries 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I've been traveling for the last 10 years ministering with Father Heart Ministries, so it was a huge decision for me.
Yeah.
I've sifted the emotion of it now. It's not emotional anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was a very emotional decision too, because this is kind of where I found my place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's with trepidation I step out of it and into the unknown, but a little bit of excitement too.
Yes.
Because I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's entirely up to God. And I think that's really exciting.
Yes.
A little bit unnerving.
Yeah, I get that.
but really exciting.
Yeah.
Because I'm finally at peace with not having to make anything happen.
Wow.
And if the rest of my life is doing domestic chores at home and loving my wife, doing the occasional video thing or writing, that's fine. I'm finding contentment in it.
Wow, good.
You know?
Yeah.
So we will see.
We'll see. Well, thank you, John, for sharing that. I think it's fair to say, and some of you will know this already, but this... there's a number of changes going on in Father Heart Ministries at the moment. I suppose I wasn't too surprised when John told me a couple of weeks ago. But I think, you know, in a sense, I think to myself, what does this change? And to me, it doesn't change anything, because John is my friend. He's not my ministry partner. And it's that friendship that is, and it's that relationship that, and the sense of family together, that is something that is needs to be the hallmark of everything we do. And we've said this before, John. I know we've talked about this together and in sessions we've done together. But on one level, John and I are chalk and cheese, aren't we? But the very first time we met, we were at a conference together, and John asked me for a lift to the railway station to get his train.
And can I just say, at this point, Mark was super kind and nice and obliging. It wasn't until later I found out that that's not what he was feeling.
The outside of me was super nice and obliging, and the inside of me was, I just want to get home. You know, I don't want to take this guy who I do not know to the train station, which was only half a mile away, you know, a kilometre away. It's like, come on, Jide, get your brain in gear. But I smiled like we do. Yeah, cool, I'll give you a lift. Well, in that short journey, we discovered that we had four or five things in common.
Yeah.
We are both born in April 1961. We're both married to Fiona, but different Fionas. Both of our Fionas are school teachers by training. Both of us lost our dads at an early age, within about a year of each other, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
My dad died in 71.
Mine was 72.
72, so within a year. And then there's another one.
There was something else. I always forget this last one.
I always
one.
Forget the last one. But there were five things that we had in common.
I can't remember.
And it was just like those things. We were born in the same year. We lost our dad. Anyway, I can't remember what it is, but... it was that journey and those things that drew us together as friends. And for me,
and you've never been able to get rid of me since?
I've never been able to get rid of him. But, you know, if we're in the same house together, we can at least share a glass or something together.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that's the hallmark of what... I mean, ministry is a terrible word, but that's the... both of our wives are Scots. Norman says it.
That's it.
Thank you,
Norman.
Yes. Both of our wives come from Scotland. My Fiona came from Edinburgh until she came down to Oxfordshire to study, and then she never went back. And I can't.
My Fiona is from Glasgow.
Yeah, and great competition. I can't say it was my fault that my Fiona didn't go back to Scotland. You know, it wasn't like she met me and stayed. She'd already decided to stay in Oxfordshire, and then we met. So, yeah, there we go. So, John, thanks for sharing that. I think, you know, in a way, you're going to find not much changes because you're still going to do what's in your heart to do.
Yeah, yeah. And as you know, I had a great conversation with Mark Head, and he was saying, you know, as far as he's concerned, there's still relationship there.
Yeah.
You know, things like gatherings and stuff, I'll still be welcome to go to those kind of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not as though that all ties have been severed.
Yeah.
It's not at all. I'm leaving a formal position, if you like, as an A school leader.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So does that have any implications for Father Heart Scotland, or is that just going to carry on doing what it's done?
Well, I have a meeting with the trustees tomorrow to see what we do, but I think we'll probably need to change the name. We'll remain a charity because the purposes remain the same.
Yeah.
We didn't have any legal ties to New Zealand Father Heart Ministries.
Yeah.
It was just a relational connection.
Sure.
So, essentially, if anything needs to change, it'll just be the name.
Okay, good. And what about the other thing we see on Facebook called Sonship? What's that, John?
Well, that was originally... when I began to write, I realised that I wanted to keep my writing separate from Father Heart Scotland, mm-hmm. because I wasn't doing that as a part of Father Heart Ministries. I was just doing that as John MacDonald.
Yeah.
And so Sonship began for that purpose, but it's kind of, I guess it's really descriptive of how I see my life,
mm-hmm.
as a life of sonship. That's what I want to devote my life to being a son.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff will come out of that, writing or conferences or vacuuming the carpet, or you know,
yeah.
all of these things, and so really that was why Sonship began, and I had Tom Carroll design a logo for it and everything,
mm-hmm.
So it was really the vehicle for my ministry separate from Father Heart Ministries, but also a description of the kind of life that I want to live and I want to encourage others to live.
Yeah. So we're going to see more of that. I mean, I know you do your podcasts.
Yep. I do the podcast under that banner, but although the podcast isn't called Sonship, I know, folks, this is confusing.
You're just trying to compete with that Norwegian pop band, aren't you? Of the 70s.
I'm trying to compete with Barry Adams, but I'm way behind him in the number of websites and things that he's got going.
Yeah, I know. You can't beat that guy. I mean, you get anywhere near him, he starts three websites the next morning before he's even
it
had
just
coffee.
Comes away from you, I know.
Yeah, I know. I've given up trying.
So the podcast is called The ABBA Podcast with John MacDonald.
Yeah.
And it's really, again, explore sonship, but exploring lots of other things connected with faith and spirituality. Okay. So I just posted a recent one with a Christian lady called Natalie Collins, mm-hmm. who actually ministers in the whole area of domestic abuse. And,
okay.
And that was a fascinating talk I had with her about her ministry, her faith and her book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. so little things, but those kind of things, just so that the people are hearing voices of,
yeah.
and not just the same topic, not just the same thing week after week after week.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, always the foundation is always obviously the love of God is our Father.
Yeah.
But exploring other topics out of that.
So where can we find the ABBA podcasts? Is it, it's on your website?
It's on Sonship website.
Yeah.
Sonship.co.uk. But it's also on any podcast platform. Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Deezer, Spotify, all of those. Just ABBA podcast, John McDonald, search and you'll find it.
Okay. Yeah, and how often? Once a month, once a week, once a day, whenever.
Usually, somewhere between a week and 10 days apart.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And if people subscribe to those, they'll drop into their podcast app as you do.
Yeah, they'll get a notification that there's a new podcast.
Yeah, good. So, I particularly wanted to talk to you tonight, John, about Sonship, not the website. Because I know that, as you said yourself, Sonship is the hallmark of your life. And I guess, you know, you and I, with our very similar stories of losing our dads, it's just kind of been perhaps a bit of a challenge for us, hasn't it, to really know that we're a son and that we have a father.
While my dad was alive, he was disabled, so he wasn't fathering me in the sense that a dad normally would,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so, yeah, I had no concept of what it meant to be a son.
Yeah.
Not because I was angry and all of that, although I was all of that,
mm-hmm.
but because I had never been fathered.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fathering that creates sonship in you, in the natural sense, not just in the spiritual sense. And so it has been a real difficult journey to understand what it means to be a son.
Yeah.
But I guess over the last few years, I've begun to connect with that and understand that what it means to be a son.
Yeah,
I'm not living it perfectly. I don't have a full grasp of it, but I'm certainly much more comfortable in that identity, if you like.
Just let's go back to something you just said, John. Interesting point, which the moment you said it made complete sense, but I never thought of it before in the way you were saying it. Because obviously both you and I, we've got mums, and I think we've talked about this before. Our mums have been very good and...
Pretty good, yeah.
You know, they've stuck with it on their own, you know, with their husbands dying and everything, and brought us up. that's a challenge in itself, you know. And, and you know, we could say, well, we're a son to our mum, which I would like to think we are, obviously. But you said that we get the sonship from being fathered. Yeah. Can you unpack that a little bit? Because I think that really is key for us to understand.
Yeah.
In our relationship with our Heavenly Father.
Sure. Well, I think it's, I mean, biologically, it's the father's sperm and chromosomes that determine whether you will be a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, your gender or sexual identity comes directly from your father.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're conceived in your mother's womb and everything else, but actually it's the father who... makes you what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think without a father to encourage you in what you are as you grow, then something of your identity gets missed. So you're always looking to, for me as a male especially, looking to somewhere to say, to tell me what it means for me to be male, for what it means to be for me to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
I think for women, it's that the father gives them a sense of their beauty, their worth, their value in their female identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mum does a lot of the practical stuff with girls and
yeah.
and teaches them about being hopefully about being freer with their emotion and
mm-hmm.
different things. But I think it's father who validates her identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have Jesus at his baptism and the voice comes and says, "This is my son whom I love.
Mm-hmm.
He pleases me." And it's like a validation of Jesus' identity.
Yeah.
As his son.
Yeah.
And having missed that, it took me, even after coming into this revelation, it took me quite a while to understand that my role was to respond to love as a son.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that response to love that began to shape my identity.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than all of the other things, rather than ministry or just being saved or mm-hmm. or being tough or being whatever, you know. I was going to say handsome, but I don't want to brag, you know.
Well, I mean, you're free to. So, but,
yeah, so, yeah. So there was, I think that was, I think it was very significant not having the father figure. You know, there were no uncles that took that role, no grandparents, because both my grandfathers were dead.
Mm-hmm.
One before I was born and one died when I was 2 years old.
Yeah.
And he would have been someone that would have been a fabulous father figure for me had he survived beyond my dad.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. So, yeah, I think there is something about the man, the father, dad, whatever, shaping identity that way.
Because we often talk about, don't we, about having father figures in our life, and you mentioned a grandfather and so on, and for me, 2 years after my dad was killed in a car accident, I was sent to boarding school. And now my mum did that for all the best reasons. Yeah. You know, she wanted the best for me. But one of the main things she really felt was that I needed father figures in my life.
Mm.
And she felt that that would be a place where I would find it and receive it. And so I spent 6 years from 12 to 18 in the boarding school, in a boarding house with 30 other boys. And we had house parents, house mum and dad. But they were school teachers. You know, he was my French teacher. But they were the house parents, and it was a pretty full on job. They only had one day off a week, and you know, they got 30 boys to look after, and they were a very, very godly couple. In fact, he died a number of years ago. She died a couple of weeks ago. She was 92.
Wow.
And they were a very, very godly couple, but they didn't have any children of their own. And I can honestly say that he was not a fatherly figure to me. You know, I was afraid of him. He was a very strict teacher, strict housemaster.
Yeah.
And in those days, of course, you know, you did anything wrong, you lived by the bell, and if you missed it, you know, you were punished. So it was a very
quite regimented.
Quite regimented. He was an army guy as well. So, yeah, regimented is absolutely the right word, you know. And I look back and I know he wasn't a father figure to me. But interestingly, there's a Facebook page for my old school. And a lot of the people, you know, with the house, with her dying, with the house mistress dying recently, a lot of people were posting on Facebook. They were like parents to me. And I'm kind of reading it thinking, wow, you know. And
isn't that interesting?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I know I didn't receive that. And I know part of the reason is when the first night I was in school, in boarding school, the first night in the dormitory, 13 other guys in this dormitory, seven beds down one side, seven beds down the other. I mean, I know that on that first night there, I closed my heart. Because I wouldn't have used those words, but that's what happened. And I looked at this environment as a scared, frightened 12-year-old who woke up on Sunday morning in my own home and went to bed on Sunday night in this boarding school. And I thought the only thing I could do was to close my heart, because I knew I had to survive. And I knew the only way I would survive was just building this wall around me. And that wall remained around me really until 2002, when I really understood that God was my father. And that's, you know, I closed my heart in a second. It's taken a jolly long time to start to open it. But I think we can probably all identify. I mean, obviously you and I can, but I guess a lot of people listening to this can identify with something happens in our life that causes us to close our heart. And when we close our heart, we close our heart to that fathering or mothering influence that we need to receive.
And well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? That we say, I didn't have any father figures, I would say. But that's not true. I did have, I just didn't receive them that way. Because, like you say, I built a wall around my heart to protect myself. And no matter how much they tried to guide me, love me, advise me, it just bounced off. It just bounced off of my armour, my insulation.
I mean, I know there are other people in my life who were father figures, and I received them more because they weren't in that sort of authoritarian role of teacher, housemaster. They were more friends, and I could receive something from them. I know I did, but I said, you know, I would, if anybody said to me, are you a son? I say, yeah, of course I'm a son. I'm my mum's my mum and I'm her son. But I didn't really understand what the heart of sonship was until I began to have a revelation of the father. And I don't know what you think about this, John, but people often ask me, what comes first? Do you know the, do you experience a father loving you and then you become a son? Or do you become a son and then you suddenly discover you've got a father who loves you? You got any?
I think you become a son, use a big word, ontologically. You know, by fact, you are a son. The difference is you can only live as a son and respond to a father's love. And I think that's the difference. You, the love brings out the son that's there. And begins to heal the broken son within. I think that's what's been happening with me. Even, I mean, even recently, you know, I said I've been doing therapy. I was telling you that I realized, because I had never been to my dad's funeral, as a boy, I had never properly really been able to stop grieving or and say goodbye. And so I did that at New Year. On New Year's Eve, I went to his grave. I did a little memorial service, some music. I spoke to my dad and talked to him, and my granddad. They're both in the same plot. My granddad was actually buried on New Year's Eve in 1963. So I spoke to both of them, and my dad liked a whiskey when he was fit and able and would go out with his friends.
Now we know where you get it from.
I took a little bit of whiskey with me. I had a couple of sips, and I shared my first drink with my dad.
Very good.
Poured it over the grave, but it really shifted something, Mark. Because I think not being able to get beyond the that those kind of initial stages of grief was a blockage for me living in sonship. Because there was still a part of me holding on to my dad, Angus, and wasn't fully committing myself to sonship to God because of that. And something in my heart. And so for a few days afterwards, actually, I was wandering around the house thinking, I feel as though I've left something and I don't know where I've put it. And I suddenly realized, oh my goodness, this is because I did that on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's I've been carrying this burden for years, this huge reservoir of grief and tears, and suddenly it's beginning to drain.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still going through some of the stages, you know, those Kubler-Ross five stages of grief. But I recognize it, and I recognize that it's propelling me forward rather than keeping me stuck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been huge.
Yeah. I think you're very brave, John. I think you're very brave. I think to go back to the place like that is takes a lot of guts, but it's painful.
I mean, very.
When we had this conversation, in the beginning of January, wasn't it? I was telling you that a few years ago I went to my dad's grave.
Yeah.
And see, I went to my dad's funeral. So, I went to the funeral, but at the end of the funeral, when it was the committal and the burial, my mum got me and my sister to go and sit in the car and wait. Now, she needed that moment of her final goodbye.
Yeah.
And it was very, very emotional for her, and she couldn't cope with that moment with us there, and she didn't want us to see the finality of our dad being buried, and so we sat in the car. But I always felt like I'd been denied my final goodbye.
Yeah, I get that. Totally identify with that.
And so just a few years ago I wrote a letter to my dad, and I went to his grave and I read the letter, and I was suddenly aware that there was somebody over here. And it was somebody else visiting one of their graves. I thought, oh no!
But oh my goodness!
They were visiting their family member who was about three or four graves down, and I was. But I just thought, no. Father told me to come and do this, so I'm just going to do it. And I did it, and I didn't leave the letter there. I took it with me, but
sure.
I knew when I walked away, I'd had my final goodbye, and it was very, very significant.
Yeah,
and I think for me, like it is for you, John, that was a key moment in stepping forward into my sonship with Father. And I we all have our own story. John's got his story. I've got my story. There's quite we have overlaps the two, which is why we like talking about this, but. Each one of us watching this webcast is, you've got your own journey. You've got your own pressure points in your story that may not be the death of a loved one. They may not be the death of a parent, but there will be something in your story that might be, that pressure point like John and I have just described. And sometimes going to that moment, going back to that place. Now, John and I both went to our dad's graves. You don't have to do that necessarily, but going back to the moment, the point of pain and facing it, it takes a huge amount of courage. But I do want to encourage you that it actually is something that brings freedom.
Yes.
And the more we are free, the more we are free to walk as Jesus walked. I just want to pick up something else you said, John, because I think this is important for us guys as well. I actually think it's probably more important for us guys than some of the girls. Emotions.
Haha.
Yeah. I closed my heart the first day at boarding school. And I would say that I became a fairly unemotional person. Because in my boarding school, to show emotion was a sign of weakness.
Yes.
And you were taken the mickey of, you were victimized, you were teased, you were called all sorts of names with all sorts of connotations. And so I learned to put my emotions away and keep them away because they were dangerous. They got me into trouble.
Yes.
And it was only when I left boarding school that I think I began to trust that it was okay, because I was in a safe environment of our church and people I knew who weren't, they were friends, they weren't authoritarian figures, they weren't teachers, they weren't housemasters, but I could begin to trust. And I would say it's been a very, very long journey of opening the emotions and becoming emotion, not becoming, becoming emotional. And you said, John, that mothers help daughters be free in their emotions. Who helps a son be free in his emotions?
I think it's, yes, mum can do, but I think it needs both, because it's not just, it's seeing emotion demonstrated. Mm-hmm. So it's how it works with babies, with the whole storge thing, where babies see how mum and dad love each other and relate to each other and speak tenderly to each other. Mm-hmm. I think there's a great deal of that missing, because it's not just that we don't have dads who express the emotion, but we don't see the emotion being expressed between parents either.
Yeah.
For many of us, for some of us, we did see that. And especially, I don't know about other cultures, but certainly in the west coast of Scotland, men did not do emotion.
Yeah.
And I think that some of that comes in other parts from the war, and, you know, so many men saw death, and so they shut their emotions down, didn't show their sons' emotions, so their sons couldn't show their sons' emotion. And like you, Mark, the figures all around me, the male figures, weren't uncles and granddads. It was boys in the street, like you had the boys at school, I had the boys in the street. And yeah, like you, emotion was invited bullying, it invited name calling, it invited being ostracized. And so you put on this shell and deny who you are within. And you need a father there, because I'm not going to tell my mum that I was fighting or I was doing this or doing that, or, you know, a boy held a knife at my throat, or I'm not going to tell my mum all that, but I might tell my dad.
Yeah.
And my dad might help me to express that. But instead, I never told anyone about things like this.
Yeah.
And when I'd been with my friends, we'd been in a fight, I never told them I was scared or anxious or nervous. I just laughed it all off. And so I denied my emotional self in order to present something that I thought was masculine. I think it's really important that men demonstrate their emotional vulnerability. Because when women do it, well, that's just women's stuff. That's just emotionalism and hysterics and, you know. But actually, when men begin to own their own emotional being, their own emotional baggage, and are vulnerable enough to express their emotions, I think we can create a whole different culture within masculinity. And I think you can have a father in the house and still not have that expressed and demonstrated to you. You know, I think it's so deeply rooted in so many cultures. Emotionalist men who only get excited when their team scores. They only get sentimental. They only get sentimental when they're drunk.
Right.
I love you. You're my best pal. You know.
Yeah. No, I don't know that, John.
But, and that's all right, you know. Being emotional for a man is patting your mate in the shoulder and say, "Don't worry, mate.
Get over it."
That's a man being emotional. Yeah. You know. It's and so we need. But inside, there's this whole reservoir of pain and desire for comfort.
Yeah.
That they never show.
Yeah.
It's interesting. doing therapy, because the therapists that I've been speaking to, they say, you know, some of the stuff I'm dealing with from my fifth, you know, I started doing therapy on and off in my late 50s, in my mid 50s. And it's been really interesting that they all say the stuff you're dealing with, John, is usually men in their 70s that I see coming to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, because they've bottled it up for so long, and it comes out. It comes out in illness. It comes out in anger. It comes out in all kinds of things. It comes out in divorce because they won't communicate with their wives. Now, it's not just a male problem. Some women can have that issue as well, but generally speaking, it is a male problem.
Yeah.
And so we need men who will demonstrate that it's all right to have emotions and to express them.
Yeah.
That actually that is a part of masculinity, as God made it to be. I don't know if I even answered your question there, but...
No, I think that's really helpful, John, because it's that freedom. I'll tell you a little story. I did an A school a while ago, a number of years ago. And at the end of this A school, a lovely old lady, she must have been 80, a lovely old lady, she came up to me and she said, "Mark," she said, "I just want to say something to you. I've noticed something about you this week and I just want to encourage you." And I thought, "Oh, that's nice. I always like a bit of encouragement at the end of an A school." And she said, "Mark, she put her hand on my hand, you know, like only old ladies can do and get away with it. You know, she put her hand on my hand and she said, "Mark," she said, "I've really appreciated your feminine side this week." And I thought you said you were going to encourage me. Because initially my initial response was, "What?" And then as I reflected on what she said, I thought, actually, that is the fruit of me opening my heart up and walking in sonship and allowing myself to be comforted.
Wow.
And allowing myself to receive tenderness, because I never received that. I mean,
Me neither.
You know, my mum was wonderful after my dad died, but she was coping with her own grief. And then I went to boarding school, and when I left boarding school, I was 18. And you see, what I needed was not a boarding school. I actually needed my mum.
Yeah.
And you know, my mum and I have had that conversation. And, you know, between us, it's all okay now. And I know she was doing the absolute best for me. But I ended up being very, very encouraged when that lady said that to me, because I realized it was the fruit of a comforted heart.
Yeah.
And it was a fruit of a heart that had begun to open up and allow those things to be touched. And it wasn't always easy. As you've explained, John, and it was sometimes very difficult.
Part of the problem for your mum and my mum, because you weren't an only child, you had siblings.
Yeah.
I had siblings. And so mum is trying to be mum and dad to a bunch of kids, not just one kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And she doesn't have time for the sentimentality. She doesn't have time for the one-on-one attention.
Yeah.
Because she's just doing enough to keep everything together, including our own sanity,
herself, yeah,
and health and everything else, you know. So all of our energy is going into that, and she just doesn't have the emotional capacity to give us the comfort and everything else we need. Not because she doesn't love us, but because she's doing everything she can out of her love for us.
Yes, exactly. That's absolutely it. And so, let's roll the story forward a little bit, because this is where I want to talk about for a few minutes before we finish, John, is what does it look like? What does sonship look like for you?
For me, it's, yes, it begins with a response to the love that Father's giving me, the comfort that he's bringing and everything else. But then there comes a point where it begins to overflow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the spiritual stuff that I'm noticing is changing the most, but it's how I treat people, how I respond to people, how I suddenly I'm not dismissive, so dismissive of people, because they're different from me or have different beliefs or different lifestyles, or I'm more aware of the fact that silly things like my wife is out working all day, I'm at home. I can't. It's just downright wrong of me to do whatever I want during the day and expect her to come home, cook the dinner, clean the dishes, and wipe the worktops down, put a washing in the machine, and hang it up. And it's just that's abuse, actually. You know, that's spousal abuse to do that. And but that is not what makes me do those things.
Yeah.
Love has changed my heart so that
you want
Yeah. This is a way to love my wife.
Yeah.
You know, that when we were first married, for me, love was all about saying I love you and having sex. You know, to be blunt.
Yeah.
But actually, that's not love.
Mm-hmm.
It's a minuscule part of love.
Yeah.
But love is actually demonstrating to someone else how much you value them.
Yeah.
As God's love has demonstrated to me how much he values me, the overflow of that is my life and my behavior demonstrating to other people the value I put upon them.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, whether it's my wife with doing the housework, whether it's a friend who is having a hard time, I just call them to say, hey, mate, I just wanted to check in.
Yeah.
Just let you know I'm thinking about you and I love you and you know I'm so happy you're a friend. Little things like that, where it's, you know, it's not a huge big spiritual thing where I'm not preaching to thousands and bringing hundreds of souls into the kingdom and all that kind of stuff, but just the overflow of love, the value that I've been given and
that's really good.
I'm receiving is overflowing to others and reflecting their value back to them.
That's really, really good, John. Thank you. John, I want to thank you for sharing your heart with us tonight. I mean, looking at some of the comments, there's a lot of appreciation out there for your vulnerability and sharing your story. So thank you. And I just want you folks watching this to know that John is one of the guys that phones me up and says, Mark, I've just been thinking about you. How are you doing? And somehow he gets the timing just right. And I just need that phone call and need that encouragement. And that's why I said at the beginning, the fact that he's not going to be part of Father Heart Ministries going forward, it doesn't change anything, because he'll still phone me up and I'll still phone him up. And because that's sonship in... Sonship lets go. Sonship releases. And sonship sees growth. And it's... I just want to encourage you guys, as we've been talking tonight, that, you know, John and I have been talking about our pressure point, you know, losing our dad and the impact that had on us in similar but in different ways, obviously, because our story is different. But that's not the case for everybody. You know, we've got a friend, John and I, called Timo. And Timo said to me one day, he said, you know, you and John, he knew our stories. He said, you guys, you know, you had it rough, your dad dying and everything. He said, my dad's brilliant. He said, I've got a really good dad. And I said, tell me about that as being a son. How's that really affected you? What's been the story? He said, oh, it's really easy. He said, the danger is my dad was so good that I would never transfer from him to Father God. And he said, that was my biggest challenge, was letting go of my dad and taking hold of my Heavenly Father.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, you know. So for each one of us, whatever our dad has been like, whatever our parents have been like, whatever other things have happened in our lives that we can identify as a pressure point, maybe the Father's just been putting his finger on that, as John's been sharing tonight, and maybe you need to go back to that place. And as John shared, it takes courage. But as we've also seen from John's story, it brings freedom. And our prayer for you guys as we finish is, Father, bring them into that glorious freedom of the sons of God, the daughters of God. And whatever he's just bringing to mind today, I just encourage you not to bury it, but to try and face it. Yeah. So, John, bless you, mate. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure to spend time with you, mate.
And I think...
And with all of you lovely people.
Of course, yes. And I think we'll have to get Barry and have the three of us one day just for a chat sometime.
For old time's sake.
For old time's sake, yeah. So, guys, thank you for joining us. We'll be back same time, same place next Wednesday evening, UK time. And just bless you. Have a good week. And we'll see you then.